Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Here we go. Okay,
Dorothy and the Dealer.
Did you know
presented
that...
Presented by Mitch and Mill.
anyway, David Bowie, did you know how he wrote his songs?
No. What do you mean?
The way in which he wrote his songs was quite unique. And I mean, these days, fucking no performers
wrote
songs.
It's the same lyrics.
But basically what he would do is he would get a line and he would write a line and then he'd cut the line out and he'd put it like in a hat or a bag and then he'd write another line and he'd keep doing that. And then he'd pull the lines out individually and he would make a chorus and then he'd make a verse and then a chorus and a verse and a chorus and a verse. And that's how he wrote all his songs.
Where do you get this information from?
Well, a mate of mine was a huge Bowie fan, and he was telling me about
Bowie's
it.
Bowie's pretty cool.
But
that's pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, I think the change in Bowie was when he did Let's Dance, and because he did that, I think that was around about 84, 85. Let's dance, put on your red shoes and dance the blues. I think it was about 84.
Is that all you're going to sing for?
Yeah, that's all I'm going to sing. I think that was 84.
I'm glad you looked up the lyrics for that.
But it was kind of the end of his. I mean, I think it was really the end of his really popular singing career, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't know enough about him.
Much more after that.
I know. I love David Bowie. I love the songs. I love his songs.
Did you know that he was really good friends with Ricky Gervais?
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, him and Ricky
but
Gervais.
I know
really
that every
friends.
Christmas time you reshare the Bing Crosby and David Bowie song.
Yeah, that's
every
one of my
Christmas
favorites.
Time.
That's one of my favorites.
It is actually a great little that's, Christmas.
Do you know what song it is?
Little Drummer Boy.
Yeah, Little Drummer Boy.
Yeah.
And Bing Crosby and David Bowie.
I loved Bing Crosby growing up, but David Bowie, yeah. Mm. Let's dance. Put on a red shoes and.
Okay, so what are we talking about?
Okay, not biting with that one.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about inspired action. I really want to talk about this. I'll tell you why. A couple of podcasts ago, it was the one that we did on perceptions,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of tricked people into...
tricky.
We were a bit tricky in how we communicated on that podcast because what we were trying to do is we were trying to make sure that... we were sending a message across to keep people focused and they're, you know, having a discussion about being aligned and doing what is important to you and not getting sidetracked by what you're hearing. And one of the things we were talking about is, you know, everybody running in and saving the children and all those sorts of things. And then we commented and said, you know, the best thing you can do is to keep your focus because what happens is that people go in and they decide that, okay, this is my mission in life, but now that this is going on, I'm just going to put everything down and go over to this, right? And that's not conducive to living an inspired life,
mm-hmm.
like just putting down what you were meant to be doing and then going off here with this concept of saving the children or saving the whales or saving the planet or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with when, like as we finished the podcast, I was thinking about it and I was thinking that people do want to take action, right? And there are things that people can do and I think it's worthy of us having a conversation about that because just taking action for the sake of taking action isn't productive, right? It's just taking us away from where we need to be. But having and taking inspired action is mm-hmm. productive mm-hmm. and having an understanding of what inspired action is and how we can make a difference in the world and what are the sorts of things we can do that are going to make a difference and not take us off track, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things, just as an example, right, is not long after we had that podcast, you know, there was a bit of stuff going on in Melbourne and stuff like that with Dan Andrews and stuff like that. And what happened was people were not knowing what to do. They wanted to be able to take some action. Doesn't mean change the course of their lives, but take some action. And we talked a little bit about someone that I've just started to follow on Instagram, Anna Rose Richards, I think her name is, who recommended that people write letters to their ministers, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the ministers are there to serve the people, and they don't know what if we aren't telling them what we want, then there's no way that they can give us what we want. So one of the things we can do is to start to take action by you know, writing letters and communicating with people and letting people know where we're at, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought we need to discuss a little bit about what actual inspired action is so that we can really be clear with that, because I feel like it's easy to say, no, don't do anything, just go. But until we know what that as is actually doing, then people feel like they're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that if you're talking about, I mean, people, I think first off are really easily distracted from what it is that they love. And I think people have been easily distracted from what it is that they love. And we really have been seeing that over the past, you know, since especially 2020 has just been a world of distraction. And I think that it's, what happens with people, though, is that they forget what it is. I mean, people have been, you would perceive people have been dumbed down. When you're in a country where there's plenty of money and, you know, it's really not, you don't get major revolts happening here because, you know, everybody's quite comfortable. There's a lot here. Nobody wants to really upset the apple cart. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, we talked about that in another time because we said that there's been distractions. And so the fact that you've got your Netflix and the fact that you can get your JobKeeper and the fact you've got all that sort of stuff, people don't want to get, like, you know.
Yeah, 100%. So people
ruffle feathers.
So when you're distracted like that and you're just, you know, you're comfortable in being in that level of uncomfortability, you are not doing what is important to you and what's inspiring to you and what is, you know, unless you're a fucking film critic and that's your job to sit on Netflix and fucking critique films, then, you know, you shouldn't be sitting on there the amount of time that people are sitting on there. But I think that what's happening with people is that we've got to get back to remembering what it is that we go through when we're inspired. We've got to get back to remembering what happens to us physiologically when we're doing what is important to us, when we're doing what we love. And one of the things that has happened is that we're becoming, I think in some way, we're coming out of that part of us that was, you know, a community of everybody, you know, everybody putting up with it. You know, everybody going, well, fucking, you know, we're comfortable in our uncomfortableness. And then you have this other emerging push, you know, you see it within lots of different organizations where people are, you know, you got to follow your passion. You got to follow what's important to you. You got to do it, you know, you got to do what you love. From people that are not following their passion, that are not doing what's important to them, that are not doing what they love, you know, it's just the blind leading the blind, you know, and I think that we're being sent back to ourselves to stop and remember the little things that we do, because people think, okay, if I have to do what inspires me, then it's linked to their career. So many people think that it's linked to their career, or so many people think that, you know, if I do what inspires me, I'm here to fucking change the world. I'm here to save the whales. I'm here to fucking save the dogs. I'm here to, you know, save the starving children. I'm here to end poverty. And that's...
So just explain then what it is that to be...
Well, I think I'm getting there. I think that we're so caught up in that whole stuff of being sold that, you know, that we are the miracle cure, when we can't even start with the little things. Like, what is the last thing that you did that allowed you to feel inspired? What is the last thing that you did that allowed you to feel connected? What is the last thing that you did that allowed you to feel, you know, congruent with your values? Do you even know what inspires you? Do you even know what is value to you? Are you even aware, or have you just, you know, slipped into this river of lost, you know, this river of not knowing, forgetting, because everybody else did. Everybody else is out there promoting this. Lots of people are out there promoting this stuff of, you've got to get back to what is important to you, but they don't do what's important to them. So there are physiological effects that happen to us when we're doing what we love, when we're doing what's important to us. Mm-hmm. If we don't connect with those things and we forget that, And then we do that for long enough, it goes out of our system. We, you know, the true nature is very simple of when we know that we're in that state of inspiration. You know, what are the little things you're doing every day to remind you to make sure that you've, that that's what's important. And this is when we actually affect people, when we are tapping into what inspires us, and we are, you know, and we're moving people through doing the things on a daily basis that keep us feel energized and awake and connected and congruent. They're the things that are so, super important.
So explain that then.
In terms of what?
Well, and tell and, me, you were going to talk about what, like, how do we know we're inspired? Like, what do we need to do?
Well, I
what
think that, I think that, I mean, an example of that would be, you know, if, like one of the things that I personally do that really inspires me is as often as I can, I'll either exercise. So I love exercising because it allows me to feel inspired. And, you know, beforehand, like, I haven't got to get into my car and drive to a gym. So my gym is just out my front door and it's about 10 meters away. And so I have a fully purpose-built gym at my house so that I didn't have to have that drive. But I know that sometimes that walk from the front door to the gym is a fucking nightmare. It's a pain in the arse. Yeah. But once I get in there and I start and I exercise and I start to feel my body and I start to, you know, I accomplish something, I go up a weight, whatever that is, and I feel that inside of me, you know, I tap into that part of me that feels physiologically connected to my body. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then I feel this sense of accomplishment, even if nobody's there. And I'm like, wow, that was good. I never thought I'd be able to do that. And I'm actually, you know, and you know, that sense of accomplishment comes from months and months and months of being able to get myself to that point where I was able to go up a weight, or I was able to ride longer, or I was able to run faster, whatever that is. That's that sense of inspiration, because in that moment, you know, you have to be in that moment when you're in that moment. And that's one of the things as well, is being, when you're doing things that inspire you, you have to be in it. You have to be in that moment. It's like if I'm if I'm hurtling down a rock face with some of the guys, you know, when you get there, you can hear your head going, fucking don't do this, man. Like, you know, look at this A line, look at this B line. These guys are 10 years on you. They're, you know, they've been doing this much longer. And then my inside of me, my that voice wakes up inside of me and goes, no, you can do this. You know, you got this. Just take your time, Mitch. Just because they're going fast, it doesn't mean you have to go fast. Just be intelligent about what you're doing. And then I feel this, you know, it might take me 40 minutes to get up to that hill to be able to do a 4-minute run down. But when I get to the end of that run, you know, with all the other guys that are there, nobody says anything for 2 to 3 minutes. You know, and then somebody will look and go, fuck, that was cool. You know, well done, guys. That was great. And everybody, you know, acknowledges each other. But in that moment, we're all just basking in that sense of congruency, that sense of connection, that sense of, you know, having been in a state of flow where you can't think of anything else other than where you're going to move your brakes, where you're going to move your handlebars next. That's really, really, really...
So
when
I
you
think,
know you're in that inspired
well,
state.
Well, that's to me what I think is a good indication, is when you know you can get in flow in that space. So being in flow to me is places where you're inspired. You don't get in flow in places where you're not inspired.
Yeah.
Where you can be in flow, where you can be, and the flow is that what is it? Selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness. And so when you're in that space, that's true inspiration for me. It's like you know that you don't need to be anywhere else. You're not trying to be anywhere else. You have to be fully present, and you can just be and let the moment sort of take you.
So that has the reason that we know that affects people is because when we're in flow states and when we're doing what we love, it has a processional effect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really great book, which I've spoken about before on the podcast, called Strategy of a Dolphin, where he discusses procession. And the first time I understood procession was at an event called Money and You many, many years ago, about 1996. And I was at this event and they were talking.
So that's one of the seminars I would have always loved to have done and I never got to do. I think they're still doing them in Singapore or something.
Yeah, China and Singapore, I think.
Yeah.
And so when I did that event and they spoke about procession, it just opened my whole understanding. And ever since there, building on what I learned there and being able to speak further about what I learned there. And one of the things that I think is really evident now in society in terms of what I learned and how what I learned fits into society now is that lots of people are out doing things and they're wanting the immediate gratification and the immediate satisfaction from what they're doing. And they feel that if they don't get it immediately, because we're in an immediate world at the moment, if they don't get it immediately, then they don't feel that they're on track. So lots of people are lost because they're not getting the immediate gratification from the actions that they're taking in terms of their career, their families, that and all that. So when you do that and you're in that state of wanting immediate gratification, you can't get it. It's very primitive. It's a primitive response that you're looking for. But if you understand how procession works, and procession is basically, if you can imagine that there are two flowers, when one bee is picking up the pollen from one flower, flying to the next flower, almost said swimming there, flying to the next flower. When he gets to the next flower, you think that he's pollinating the next flower. But in actual fact, what the bee is doing, it's pollinating everywhere around the flower. Sure, just pollen ends up on the next flower, but it's spreading the pollen into the air with its wings as it flies. The pollen falls off and goes into the air. This is what procession is. The processional effect, as opposed to the immediate gratification from turning up at the next flower, the processional effect is much greater. The force of that processional effects is much greater than just from point to point.
Yeah.
So people, because they can't see the processional effect that they're having in their reality immediately, they don't feel they're being effective in the world. But in actual fact, they are being effective in the world. But because they don't see it, this is how people get lost. If you understand that what it is you've got to feel that lets you know you're congruent with your values and you are processionally affecting the world, if you can understand what the internal register is to let you know that you're on track with that, it is to feel a sense of selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness at the end and during the process of doing what it is that inspires you. If you're not feeling those things, then you're being motivated, and motivated is trying to get a person. Motivated is distorted sensory input docking into the motor function of the body and the brain, a motor function of the brain, which is affecting the body and compelling the body to go and do things that it doesn't want to do.
Yes.
So
the motivation is external. Inspiration is internal.
Internal, yeah.
Yeah. Motivation needs an outside source to, lead you there, with a treat or a cookie or something.
Or to acknowledge you or pat you on the back or say well done or put you on a pedestal.
As opposed to intrinsic, where it's just that and that inspiration, which is intrinsic, and it's about getting that for yourself, not needing the outward source.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the processional effect of your actions is important, because I think when we're talking about people just wanting to take action and go in and save the whales or save the world, they're doing it because of this motivational effect that they think they're going to have once they achieve this result, not understanding that it's actually, because when the bee goes to the flower, it's all the places in between that get pollinated as well as the flower at the end. So it's the process. And so the process is about doing what you love. And when you do what you love, so how does you being on your bike or, doing the things that you love, how does that make a difference in the world? If we're taking inspired action, what does it mean to take inspired action?
Well, the first thing to do is the first thing. The reason I'm saying that is because you're not going to save the fucking world. You're not going to save the fucking whales. You're not going to save the dogs. You're not going to save the children. You're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And so the thing that you have to get rid of that unrealistic expectation, because you're doomed for failure if you have that in your fucking
head.
Well,
one of the biggest things, the biggest problems that we face as human beings is having unrealistic expectations, because when they're not met, on ourselves or on other people, that's when we get disappointed in ourselves or disappointed in others.
So I think the first thing that people can do is find that one thing that gets them into that state of flow.
Mm-hmm.
Start to remember the actions that they take that allow them to feel that. And build more on those actions on a daily basis.
Mm.
I think that's so, but people feel sometimes like,
well, because
guilty that they're not fucking saving the world. Well, but what if you're causing more problems not doing what you love?
Well, I think that the way that we can just describe it on a smaller scale is that in you, doing what you love, not only does it affect yourself, but it also affects your kids because they see, like, Ollie follows you to the gym and he tries to copy you because he'll get into his little shorts when you're going out to the gym.
Runs around his jocks.
Yeah, and says, I'm going to the gym with Dad. And then not only does it affect you, but it affects the kids. It also affects the people you talk to and the people you work with. It infects your – infects. It affects your friendships, and it affects your the way you socialize. It affects what you communicate to people on this podcast, and everyone's got an influence in the world.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the level of what influence you perceive, you not only affect yourself, but you affect other people as a result of your actions.
Well, and I think about it. The fucking bee flying from one flower to another flower is a bee. It's a tiny insect. But without them, we're gone. Within 4 years, we would be gone.
Yeah.
So if that tiny insect, just in the action of flying from one flower to another flower, can affect the world, then the big actions, the little actions that you take, as well as the big actions, affect the world just as much. Mm. You know, but we're sold this delusion of, you know, we're fucking going to change the food intake of the world. We're going to end fucking Coca-Cola, or we're going to, you know, we're going to end, you know, bring back democracy or all that sort of stuff. And it's just crazy.
So you think that, so basically the best inspired action you can take is to transform yourself.
Yeah.
In terms of, in transforming, it's not about transforming, it's about being as...
Well, it's, look,
as connected to yourself as and as congruent, because if you're trying to say, so the way I see it, right, is people are there trying to save the children, but they don't want to save themselves. They don't want to go and live wholeheartedly. They don't want to go and, you know, they want to save the whales, but they don't want to look at the part of themselves that they perceive needs saving, because that's the only reason they will try and fix someone else, because it's a good scapegoat to not look at ourselves. I saw somebody say a great quote, or not a quote, she wasn't saying a quote, she was just saying it, but I can't remember who it was. I was just listening to it on Instagram, I think. And she said, "It's other people's awakening is not our job." Uh-huh. Other people's awakening is not our job.
So what do you think that
Living
means?
Wholeheartedly is your only job. Because you cannot, like you always say, you can't squeeze a green fig ripe. You can't you can't try and fit something square into a round hole.
If I want to rob you of your dreams and aspirations, I'll try to impose on top of you a desire to make changes in the world that are fucking impossible.
Yes.
By one person.
Correct.
So it has to start with one person either way.
Yeah.
And it starts if we all did what we loved, and we all loved what we did, we would be a completely different world.
100%, yes. So that whole concept of wanting to try and fix out there, to me, is a scapegoat for not wanting to look inside, not looking at where you perceive you needed saving, or what you perceive you wanted somebody to do for you, or whatever. Mm. And instead of doing that for ourselves, it's easier to go out in the world and say, oh, this is broken, this is, you know, this is not working. So the inspired action comes by taking back who we are, living as authentically as possible. Because when we live as authentically as possible, we're living in our values. Mm-hmm. We're living from inspiration. And then whatever whatever action we're taking, then from that point can be inspired action. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're just running in and you're just cancelling what you're doing over here to go and fix something over here, that's not inspired. Mm. That's a
stimulus response.
Yeah, and it's trying to get an outcome, or it's trying to get an outcome on the outside instead of looking at what you actually need to do on the inside. Mm. So, you know, when we see stuff going on in the world, we have to look at, and I suppose the best way to help is to look at, well, what are we doing? What am I noticing out there? And where is this me? And what can I do to be the best example of me that I can possibly be? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you can't write to people and you can't talk to people, etc., but you've got to be aware that that starts with you and your inspiration, because that's what processionally goes out into the world. Mm-hmm. And that's what's processionally affecting yourself, your kids, the people around you, whether they, you know, a really good example of that for me is that people will come, like in the last few months I've had a few people come to me, or I've heard people say different things over time. Like there was one lady in the middle of the whole lockdown situation here in Perth, or just after, and she said, oh, she came over to me. I'd met her in the shopping centre, and she came over to me and she said, you know, what you do, she said, has totally transformed how I see this scenario here at the moment. I can't even go and visit my grandmother who's ill in Adelaide, like dying mm-hmm. in Adelaide. She literally died the night that I spoke to her that night. But she was able to tell me about the effect that we'd had that we didn't even realise that we'd had. Mm-hmm. Somebody else comes and says, you know, I've implemented the wealth. Literally just this morning we get somebody else send a message in saying that they've implemented certain things because they've just been they were just listening to – these are not things that we consciously are aware of that we're doing, mm-hmm. but our inspiration is – infiltrating in ways that we're not aware of, and we will mm-hmm. never be aware of the mm-hmm. full extent of it. So the more and more we can be those versions of ourselves, that's us, that's anybody, we get to have that impact, and then that's the best way to take action because you're inspiring other people by your own actions.
Well, I also think that when you understand precession and you understand what is happening precessionally as you do what you love, because people say to me, you know, I don't know what I'm here to do. I don't know. And it's like stop tagging that to some sort of service. Mm. But in actual fact, ask yourself the question, what have I done today that's allowed me to feel connected, inspired, selflessness, a sense of timelessness, a sense of effortlessness, a sense of richness? Was it that you danced with your little kid? Was it that you played chasing with your wife? Was it, you know, just the little things that I do that allow me to feel that those moments, you know, of when I'm in that state, that I know if I just do those things, then I may not see the effect straight away, but I know that I'm processionally affecting.
So when people are like in that state, what should they be aware of is happening for them? Like what actually happens as a physiological level?
Well, I mean, that's a fucking huge rabbit hole, but I mean, basically what you're doing is you feel that space and time eludes you. You feel that it's not an effort to do it. You feel that afterwards it was rich mm. and you feel that it was selfless. So it was about both of you.
But when you're on your bike ride, for example, what do you feel in terms of your body and
I'm very present to everything that's happening mm. around me. So I can see everything that's going on around me. I know that one wrong move.
You're not thinking about dinner tonight.
No. You're very in that moment. Yeah. You're not thinking about, like I just met Matt on the weekend. He just being out for a ride, I was at the park, he pulled up on his bike and I'm like, dude, you should have given me a ring, I'd have come for a ride with you. And he was like, no, my head was just clogged, I just had to get out and go for a ride.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, do the things that unclog you, that unplug you, you know, plug out, yeah. switch off and tune into yourself, and that's really what happens when you're
on
a bike.
You used to start all the videos on Facebook like that, plug out, tune in for 2 minutes. Yeah. One came on the Facebook feed as a memory not long ago. Yeah, the kids do that for me. Yeah. I get, obviously if I had my own kids, I probably wouldn't. But mm-hmm. when I get a chance to be around kids and just I get to plug out and just be present, you know, that's one of the ways anyway for me.
Cool. Anyway. I hope that helped.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.